It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. This is episode 104. And in the second and third block, we visit with Travis Tuttle and Andrew Probst. I always say that wrong, and you can hear that in the interview. Those are the two elders that were actually kidnapped in Russia back in the late 90s, and they talk about their experience, and their experience has been made into a movie that is available in the theaters here in the state of Utah, also kind of around the Intermountain West, but you can request that film to be played in your area if you go to their Facebook page, The Saratov Approach, and leave a message saying, hey, you know what, we want your show in Texas or Kentucky or wherever it is that you live. It may not make it to Morocco. Sorry, person who listens in Morocco, but I'm not saying it couldn't. I'm just saying it probably won't. A couple of things before we have a guest here in the opening exercises of the Cultural Hall. I wanted to share these two comments that came in the last couple of days on iTunes. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. That's easy. That way you get it as soon as it's made available. Derek, he leaves a comment that I really enjoyed because I wanted... Well, let me share it and then I'll tell you why I enjoyed it. Number one, his comment says, I listen to many podcasts. This is probably number two on my list of podcasts that I listen to. I absolutely love the different views that everyone shares. Great job, everyone, on the panel. To which makes me think, okay, so we're number two. All right, that's great. I mean, there's a lot of podcasts, but what's number one? And then another comment, this is from Jenny, that says, this podcast is entertaining and relevant, not too serious, but not so flippant that you feel like you're wasting your time by listening. So thank you, Jenny. I appreciate that as well. You can always leave your reviews by going to iTunes, logging in, and making a review. But hang on. Adam White, the director, on the phone with us in opening exercises. Hello, sir.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm good. Why are you calling me right now?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I just, this with all these, this kind of the buzz going around the Saratov approach, you know, well, here's the thing. I'm actually good friends with Elder Tuttle, Travis Tuttle. He and I grew up together. And, you know, we just finished a film called Inspired Guns that you can actually see the trailer run with Saratov approach if you actually go into the theaters and see that. And there's just been a big, you know, just a big, you know, movement of, you know, acceptance towards these LDS missionary movies, I think. And it's been kind of a neat thing to see, you know, how well these things have been received by everybody, you know, inside and outside of our religion, I think.
It's a resurgence. It's a renaissance. We're heading back into the Mormon mission renaissance. I don't know.
That's right. That's right. You know, we kind of had a little bit of lull. I mean, other than the Pioneer movies that have come out recently, there hasn't really been a lot of content coming through this LDS niche, I think.
And you yourself, you directed the movie Inspired Guns. When is that coming out? The trailer is as you mentioned, going before Saratov Approach, if you see it here in Utah. But when is your movie coming out?
It'll be out in January, probably towards the end of January. So we'll premiere it in theaters. It'll be in theaters for a while, and then, you know, obviously come out on DVD after that. But yeah, January is when we're looking to release it.
And the film is called Inspired Guns. What is that about?
Well, it's considering the kind of the how guns have been playing a role in our society lately. I was a little bit concerned about having that name, but it's a play on words for the term hired guns. You know, instead of hired guns, inspired guns. Uh-huh. And that stems from two missionaries that get caught up teaching two members of the mafia. And these members of the mafia are basically dumb and dumber on the mafia, and they don't realize that they're missionaries. They think they're messengers from the boss, and they end up kind of helping out these two guys. And so they're inspired guns instead of hired guns. So that's kind of how that's where the title comes from.
So if people aren't able to see it, obviously there's a lot of people who don't listen to the Cultural Hall in Utah. They live somewhere else and aren't able to see it at the front end of Saratov Approach. Where can people see it?
Well, yeah, you can just go onto YouTube and just search for Inspired Guns trailer, and you'll see it there. It's actually, you know, we just launched the trailer a couple of days ago, and we've had a great turnout as far as, I mean, we're at like 15,000 views or something already in 48 hours. So it's actually been pretty cool to see, you know, how it's been received, and people posting a lot of positive comments and emailing me and telling me how awesome it looks and stuff. So that's kind of nice to see. But, yeah, you can go to our Facebook page as well, facebook.com/inspiredguns. and you'll see the trailer there and stay up to date on anything that we're doing there.
Now, let me ask you just a couple other questions, too. Is this your first LDS film?
Yeah, it is. It is. In fact, I wrote this thing 10 years ago. I came up with the idea when I was on my mission in Argentina and wrote it shortly thereafter and then just kind of sat on it while I was doing other things. And for some reason, within the last 3 years, just thought, I really need to make this movie. And the timing was very interesting because, you know, missionaries is such a hot topic right now, you know, in our church with the changing of the age of the missionaries. And I had this movie was already planned and going by the time that announcement ever came out. And I was like, well, that's very curious timing. But anyway, so yeah, this is the first one. And hopefully it turns out to where people will enjoy it and like it. And we'll do another one.
One of the other things that I liked is in an email that I heard about Inspired Guns, I heard about how you guys have been sneaking into movie theaters to hear how the trailer is received.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's one of those things, right? It's your movie. It's my first movie. Are people going to laugh at this? Is this going to be a bomb? You know, so I went into at least two different showings of Saratov and just actually took my iPhone in there and recorded because I wanted to hear how the people would respond to the trailer. And thankfully, there was a lot of laughter. So that made me feel good that we had done something good here.
And then the last question is, I hear that there's an amazingly talented actor in your film, small part, but just amazingly talented actor in your film. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think, you know, we had this part where it was like, there, you know, the mafia guys are going to church and then there's some FBI guys kind of following them in there. And when they go into church, we needed someone that could really sell somebody sleeping on the couch, you know, this, a guy that was kind of like, yeah, he's active, but you know, he sleeps because he doesn't have a super strong testimony. And so immediately I thought Richie Stedman, that
perfect
guy would nail this part. And so that's how that came to be.
it was a lot of fun to be able to do. And so I appreciate, you know, it was a quick one-off and I loved it. I loved being on set with you guys. And hopefully as it gets closer to the film coming out, we can have you on and do a full episode about the film Inspired Guns, get a couple of the actors and yourself in.
Yeah. I would love to do that.
So go check it out. It's the Saratov Approach. If you live in Utah, check it out. Get there early enough for the trailers so you can see the trailer for Inspired Guns. If you live somewhere else beyond the Zion Curtain, make sure you check it out on YouTube, Inspired Guns trailer, or you can just follow them on Facebook so you can hear about all the stuff that's coming up with the film and then look for it to come. You said probably last week in January?
Yeah, we're thinking the 24th, but we haven't set a firm date yet.
Nice.
So right around then.
Nice. I appreciate it, Adam. Thanks for calling and checking in with us here in the Cultural Hall.
Yeah, you bet. Anytime.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
All right, so coming up in the second and third block, we will talk with Elder Tuttle and Elder Probst. It's the two missionaries that were kidnapped in Russia on their mission and then are all the subject of the film The Saratov Approach. That's coming back in the second and third block.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
It's time for the second block here of the Cultural Hall, and I'm pretty honored because before this whole movie actually came about, I had the idea of trying to track you guys down. A while back, you guys spoke at a fireside or something, right? At the University of Utah or something? And
actually, it wasn't too far from here in Bountiful.
Oh, it was up in Bountiful.
Yes.
It's the two elders, Travis Tuttle and Andrew Probst, who were kidnapped, did I say it right?
Absolutely.
Okay, right. Just making sure. Yeah. Who were kidnapped in Russia on their missions back in the late 90s. And this isn't the actors. This is not the people who play these guys. These are the actual elders serving their mission. So I want to get to know both of you and then talk about, obviously, what happened. Who wants to go first?
Travis, go ahead.
Travis.
Okay,
all right.
I'll go first.
So, Travis, you're from where?
I live in Mesa, Arizona.
Now is where you live, but before you'd gone on your mission, you were from?
Gilbert, Arizona.
Yeah. So essentially the same place.
Pretty much.
Now, member of the church your whole life?
Correct.
Lifer. Okay.
Lifer.
Pioneer stock. Are we going back that far?
We are.
Okay. Yep. Anyone care to drop any names here that we would know?
Well, everybody came from England, and there is one name that I can drop, but I can't remember what it is, so yeah, we won't drop it right now.
Brigham something. Yeah, I'm not really.
I can't remember the last name.
And so whole life wanted to serve a mission?
No. So that's where Andrew and I are different. There was just no desire growing up.
Okay.
Didn't really seem like that much fun. You know, you hear the stories of going around, knocking on doors and getting beat up. There was just something about that didn't sound fun or enticing. And when I was 17, 18 years old, my dad kind of said, this is your decision. He never served a mission, but he said, this is something I think you should really think about doing. And then also in the area, we had a stake, a guy that was pretty much in charge of helping the young men get ready to go on missions. And he definitely took me under his wing, Jim Goodwin. And he made it possible. So between those two, and then great example for my grandfather as well, those were pretty much the three guys that helped push me over the edge.
So is it like one of those things that you see in like LDS commercials and stuff like that, where your dad takes you camping and you're sitting around the campfire and it's like, son, I want you to consider the future. Was it that kind of thing, or was it just
No, it was actually passive? In the garage.
Oh, and but was it working on, what I'm saying?
Was we were out there together, and it was basically like, hey, listen, this is... You're getting ready to turn 19, and you need to start deciding what you're going to do with your life, because you're not going to live here forever.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like his preemptive of, hey, I want you to get out of here pretty soon, but before you leave, why don't you make a good decision and go do something worthwhile for at least a couple of years?
Now, you mentioned that you had heard about like missionaries getting beat up and stuff like that. Was that something you'd really heard about, like people getting like physically beaten up on their mission?
Sure. I mean, it happens to missionaries all the time, getting beat up. And there was... a few that were living in the area that, you hear a couple stories here and there. And so it was something that I'd heard about, and it was definitely, there. It was a real thing.
So what was the kicker then? Dad asks you, hey, really think about it. Guy in the ward or in the stake says, this is my calling. I'm trying to help prep you. What was the thing that made you go, all right, I guess I'll do this?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't say, there's not any great revelation. The clouds didn't open up and the angels did not start singing.
But it would have been really cool.
It would have helped out a lot. But it was kind of more of like a, hey, everybody wants me to do this. And instead of letting everybody down, I'll just go ahead and do this. And it kind of seems like a good idea. I mean, it's only 2 years, right? And I had an offer to go play tennis in college. So I did have a scholarship lined up.
Oh, wow. Are you any good, or was it like junior college? Well, give me the level here. What school were we talking about?
There was going to be junior college for a year and then go to ASU.
Okay. So that's a big deal.
Yeah, it was there. And I just, I kind of looked at the big picture and I said, well, if the scholarship is that important and they think I'm that special, it'll probably still be here when I get back. And so, I said, why not? But there was a more serious side to it. And I definitely did have... I really wanted to get out of the U.S., and I had actually taken a couple of years of Russian in college.
Oh, really?
And so there was I had this burning desire, like none other, to get out of the U.S., and I really did want to go to Russia. So I remember Saturday opening up that call, and it said, you're going to the Russia Samara mission. I mean, it was cloud nine. Mom was scared to death.
Russia!
Dad was beside himself, and I was thrilled. This is going to be awesome.
Cool.
Get me out of here.
All right, so that's Travis. Now let's turn to you then, Andrew. You're a lifer?
Yes.
Born and raised, where are you from?
I'm from originally from Boise, Idaho, but I grew up in Oregon.
Okay.
And my parents were converts, so they
never...
They
find the church through missionaries knocking on their door?
That's right.
Really?
That's right.
Cool.
Yep.
And so lifer, and then... But he says your experience was different. You always knew you wanted to go?
Absolutely. I'm the youngest of four girls, and my dad... obviously wanted a son at some point. And I came in kind of at the last minute, and it was just always something I had a deep desire to do. I started raising money as young as 8 years old to try to save up for my mission.
You had like the mission piggy bank.
Yeah, for sure. Pushing lawnmowers around, selling newspapers, delivering newspapers as young as I can remember, trying to save money for my mission.
And so never a question.
Absolutely not. I mean, I grew up in an area where there wasn't a lot of LDS people. So we had a lot of missionaries and not a lot of people in the church. And so I spent, a fun afternoon for me was going on splits with the missionaries or hanging out at a zone conference with the missionaries. I was like one of those, you know, crazy and
a little
love
mission
with,
nerdy. It little, sounds
no,
like
absolutely, absolutely. I just looked up to these guys and you know, wanted to get out there as soon as I could.
And so the call comes to you. I didn't ask you, Travis. How old were you when you got your mission call?
I left. I actually entered the MTC the day before my 19th birthday.
Okay. And then were you?
I entered the MTC 12 days after I turned 19.
Okay. So pretty much just as quick as we could go.
Yep. Absolutely.
When you got the call to Russia, what did you think?
I was jacked up. I was so excited. I didn't speak any Russian. I took a couple years of Spanish in high school. You know, obviously I get this mission call, the Samara mission. I haven't even heard of this place.
You're looking at it, Samara. What's Samara?
Yeah, exactly. my dad was thrilled. My mom, you know, got into the fetal position and started crying. You know, she was hoping I was going to go to like Salt Lake City, Spanish speaking or something.
I just wanted him to go somewhere safe.
Exactly. But it was, you know, one of the greatest moments of my life getting that mission call and somewhere cool. You know, I had a patriarchal blessing just a few months before that, and my patriarchal blessing said I would serve a foreign mission. And so I was assuming I was going somewhere foreign, but I had no idea what foreign meant until we knocked on that door and got, you know, completely, our lives got flipped upside down.
Completely foreign.
Yeah, completely foreign.
MTC, what did you guys think about that? Because when you're speaking Russian, you were there probably, what, like 9 weeks, right? It's not that way anymore, but a good long time.
Yeah, it was 9-10 weeks. You know, to break the monotony, there was another missionary in there, Elder Welch. We tried to go on a marshmallow mateys only eating contest. So who could eat marshmallow mateys the longest? So breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I think we went for like 2 weeks on marshmallow mateys.
Gosh.
Just, you know, anything to kind of spice up the MTC. We had a good time.
What about for you, Travis?
Oh, I was scratching the walls. I couldn't wait to get out of there. I felt, you know, it was a great experience. Don't get me wrong, but I was very excited to leave.
I, for a long time, have always wondered what it have been like, because I went stateside, so I was like 2.5 weeks and out.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have taken a single day more in that place than the 2.5 weeks that I had. So you land in Russia, right? You guys weren't in the same district, right? Came out at different times to
That's
the
right.
mission.
We were a month apart.
A month apart. So who was actually in the mission?
He was in first.
Oh, Travis was in first.
Yes.
So you land in Russia. What do you think? What's your first impression of getting to Russia?
My first impression that I can remember was, wow, this place is really dirty. You know, I landed in
You mean like polluted
January.
Or do you mean like...
No, just, the streets were dirty. The snow was dirty. It was kind of overcast, like, the first couple of days that we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody is running around. I can't understand a word that anyone is saying.
Just
it was so foreign. Yeah, you know.
You learned Russian in the MTC. You know, you come out, you're fluent. You're praying. You're bearing your testimony.
No, not exactly. It was, you know, they would come up to you and start talking really fast, and I would just look at people like, I have no idea what's going on. I don't know what he said. He sounds really upset.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes to find out, oh, he's just normal. He's just talking. He's just... said hello, how you doing, good to see you. Wow, you just sound so angry.
Yeah.
Why is that?
What about you, Andrew? What was your first impression of Russia?
My first impression, I mean, you see Rocky IV, you know, when Sylvester Stallone gets down and there's all these mountains, and I was expecting like this mountainous, you know, crazy snowy, and it's as flat as North Dakota.
Really?
You can see for miles and miles. There's no mountains. There's only one, that whole big country, there's only one mountain range there. So which, you know, Rocky IV found out, we, you know, it was filmed in Canada, so not very, very disappointing.
Terribly misleading.
Yeah, it was very misleading. But, you know, it was very similar. I mean, the second I got off the plane and got on the train, I immediately had life-changing stories happen to me every waking moment. I mean, there's always, when you're that far out of place in a country, you just attract fun stories.
So at what point in the mission was it that you guys started serving together? How long had you been out?
We'd been out for just over a year. We'd been in Russia for just over a year. We were just, it was like 14, 15 months that we'd actually been on our mission.
So at this point, pretty fluent.
Yeah.
You knew the country pretty well.
Yes.
Unable to get around as far as that goes. Had you ever heard of experiences happening within the mission like what happened to you guys? Was there any sort of warning like that?
No, not at all.
No, nothing even close to anything like this.
Ever any sort of training or like, hey, you know, this is a foreign country and we are foreigners, you know, be careful, be alert and that kind of stuff?
Just, you know, I remember a zone conference where they said, you know, basically if you find yourself in a ransom situation, you know, you're not, we're not paying a ransom, basically. So don't assume that you're going to get paid for, because that's going to put every missionary all over the world at risk, obviously. So
yeah, don't think we're going to be willing to pay for you. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Yeah,
all right,
we're
see you
done.
Later, everyone.
Everybody go out there and knock some doors.
Do some good today. Yeah. Do some good. Yeah. So let's get into the story a little bit.
Okay.
So how did this whole thing, go down?
Well, we were actually approached one Sunday. We were getting ready to leave church. And
from the church building.
From the church building.
Okay.
Yeah,
and which is a rented school. No church buildings at this point in Russia.
There are now, I understand, yeah.
There are now. But in this, ironic as it was actually an old communist meeting house that they would meet to. And then it transitioned to a school. And then on Sundays, it was a church building with a bunch of busted out windows. And, you know, very similar to what you would, you know, see in the movies.
Okay.
And we were leaving church, and this guy approached us and said, "Hey, you know, I got a friend on the other side of town that's a Mormon. I want to know more about it." And we were jazzed. I mean, this is great. Someone's actually coming up to us and wants to hear about it. And we're really excited. And there was a lot of warning signs that we probably shouldn't have gone over there, but they were ignored by me.
Yeah.
Andrew was, you know, he said, "I don't know if this is such a good idea." And I said, "Oh, this is a great idea. We're going."
This is golden, pal.
Yeah.
We're not leaving this golden. Was that kind of the argument between the two of you guys?
More or less.
Yeah. I mean, we joked earlier that day that, you know, it seemed like a weird situation. It was the first time either of us, we've both been out in the country for over a year. It's the first time either of us have ever been approached by a Russian saying, "Come over to our house." It kind of felt like a trap to me. I was kind of getting the heebie-jeebies about it and kind of expressing that to Travis. And then when we went over to the property, to their house, their apartment, we noticed that we forgot our Book of Mormon. And so we argued back and forth. I'm like, we're pointless to go over there without a Book of Mormon, you know? And he's like, "Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. It's going to be fine." And I'm like, "Man, I don't feel good about it. I just don't feel good about it at all." And so, you know, at that time he was the senior companion. And so, you know, you got to do what he got to do.
And I said, "We're going."
Yeah.
So we went, and, you know, as soon as we opened up the door, there more warning signs go off. The apartment's completely dark. You know, it's a Russian culture custom. You don't wear your boots, your hat, your jacket inside.
Oh, really?
And he had all of that on. And, I mean, it was as quick as knocking on the door to he opened it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like he was in the kitchen or the living room or anything like that. He was standing on the other side of the door waiting for me to knock on it.
Hmm.
And we went in, and the entire apartment's dark. And it was weird. It wasn't right. And we, you know, kept going, took off our shoes and hat and jacket. And as soon as that came off, they jumped us from behind and started beating us in the head with, you know, basically baseball bats.
Jeez.
And, you know, seconds after that, there's this 6'3", 6'5", 250, 300-pound guy in all black with a ski mask on with a gun pointed at us saying, "Shut up. Don't move."
Mm-hmm.
Look like the guy on Russian guy on Mortal Kombat.
Oh yeah,
you know,
okay.
with the veins.
Yeah.
That guy.
And so quite simply, when someone is that big with a gun telling you to do something, you listen.
Yeah, I guess. I guess you would.
Yeah. And you know, we actually had tried to Rambo ourselves out of there and got beat down a little bit more. And, you know, seconds after that, we're in the kitchen. Face down with handcuffs on. And shortly after that, we're put in the back of a car, taken to another apartment.
Hold on, we're jumping. You're making big leaps. Then we're on the plane back home. That's the story. That's all there is right there. I want to ask one question, then we'll take a break for a second. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
Andrew, did you, as you're kind of going in, you're talking about the heebie-jeebies in your experiences now that you have in your life from that point and since then, would you recognize that as a spirit saying, "Get out of there," or was it?
I would 100% recognize it as a prompting from the spirit, you know, that this just wasn't a comforting feeling at the time, you know, that I wasn't, it was the feeling that I had. I, you know, we were teaching 5-6 discussions a day on, you know, daily. So I never had these type of feelings going into an apartment like that. So it was very real. And I mean, it's funny that Travis can recall that because I mean, I was pretty adamant about not going and, you know, maybe trying to reach out and reschedule another time. Mm-hmm. Or just knock on the door and say, "Can we come back later? We don't have a Book of Mormon."
Which, by the way, is one of my favorite parts in the movie, where it's like, hey, we believe in a book that will help you, enjoy
You can't read. And yeah,
that you don't have right now, and we can't leave with you.
Right.
But on the flip side of what he's saying about these feelings and, you know, these kind of, I don't feel so good about this. Why would a missionary be getting that kind of, I mean, that's what you're there for, right?
Exactly.
You're supposed to teach everybody. You're supposed to talk to everybody, you know, big, tall, short, skinny, fat, doesn't matter. You're teaching that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so to get this kind of a prompting that he was feeling, I totally just blew it off and over, you know, you're crazy. You're, you know, I don't know what you're thinking, but you're not right.
Hmm.
And there's no reason that we would get this kind of, oh, you
why are we
going
to deny this guy salvation by not going in and talking to him?
Exactly.
Coming back in the third block, let's talk a little bit more, and I want to get more into the story here. That's coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
All right, so I want to ask about this. I had 19 mission companions on my mission in the 2 years I was there.
That's a lot.
That is a lot, because I hated most of them. And so I typically went a transfer. What was the dynamic of your companionship before this?
Well, there really wasn't much of a dynamic to it. So when you're in Russia, after you've been there for a year, you actually have to leave the country, and you have to go outside of the country to Finland to get your visa renewed.
Oh, really?
And so Andrew and I were put together, and it was very clearly stated when we were assigned to serve with each other, it was going to be for 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew was taking over where I had been. I had actually been there for 11 months.
Oh, my gosh.
And loved,
how was that?
No, loved it.
Was that good?
Yeah, it was awesome. Loved the city, loved the people. One area, 11 months.
Because I think that would be hard.
No.
Because you progress so much in a year that, like, you have to face ward members, and it's like, remember when I didn't know what I was doing, and
now
I sucked at this, and now I do? Well, give me another chance, you know? So 11 months, so then
he shows up, and they tell you know, he's taking over, you're getting transferred out, and then he left. We were together for, I don't know, a week or 2 weeks, and then he left for a week to go get his visa renewed.
Is that really what you were doing, or you just couldn't hack it anymore for a week? You needed a break?
I was 2 weeks with him, and I was like, get me out of this place. Exactly.
So you go get the visa, and then...
That's right. I mean, we're on a train for 7 days straight, basically. Ugh. You know? And, just no shower, no shave. You just sit on a train for 7 days.
Is that really what it's like?
Yeah, it's brutal. It is not a fun
trip. It is a long ways from Finland, from Saratov, Russia, I'll tell you.
You take the train, and you go up to Moscow, and then from Moscow, you keep going, and you end up in Finland. And you literally have, like, I don't know, 2 hours in Finland.
Mm-hmm.
You get off, you go get stamped, you turn around, you come back, and you have enough time to go grab some pizza.
Ugh.
Yep. And then, you know, once on the train till you get to Moscow, they don't weld the tracks together. So it's chin-chin, 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 chin-chin.
Yeah, good luck taking a nap.
For like
yeah.
3 days. Just nothing but that. And then you get about 2 hours outside of Moscow, and it's this... And you're like, oh, nice.
Oh, here we go. Train tracks.
Train tracks. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, and the train stops like every 45 minutes, and there's, you know, people coming into your little section trying to sell you stuff.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
You know, it's a crazy experience. Crazy experience.
So so then you go get your visa stamp, get yourself a nice pizza in Finland. You
right.
Finish it.
Finish it. Good one.
And then you get back to it. Sorry, I couldn't help
this
myself.
This guy is awesome.
When did we get this guy? And then you come back, and then he's there, and you're picking up serving with him again.
Yeah, so he basically went on a three-way split for a week, and then we get back, and then we just kind of pick up from there. And I think it was about a week after I got back when we ran into the Nikolai, which, you know, he obviously asked us over to his apartment.
So not much time at all.
No.
So then, okay, so now you go to the place, you're like, dark, creepy, red flag. No one has ever asked us to do this, red flag. Let's take our shoes off and make it so we can't leave, red flag. And then...
Yeah, and I'm just, you know, I'm simply doing what, like I always do. We got these really tall boots. I mean, there's still a lot of snow on the ground. So I'm bending over to untie my shoes, and I get one shoe untied. I stand up, and then I just just whack right on the back of the head. And all I hear is this pierced ringing sound. I'm starting to fall like a tree towards the door. I reach up toward the handle because I'm in flight or flight mode, and I'm thinking, let's get out of here, right? Mm-hmm. And so as I reach up toward the handle, I get whacked again. I don't like getting whacked on the head, so I start covering my head with my hands, and then he starts hitting my hands, which wasn't fun either. And so I keep, you know, going for the door, getting whacked, going toward the door, getting whacked. So I got hit 5 or 6 times, and then I finally just kind of give up, roll over. I look up, and there's this the Mortal Kombat dude is there, and he runs a slide on a 35 caliber, sticks it in my face, and uses a couple of Russian slang words that I can't use in here.
Well, you could. I wouldn't know what they are, but says, you probably should.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, somebody will know.
Don't move. You know, which Garrett obviously does a good job of taking out those nasty words, but, you know, basically don't move and be quiet. So, I mean, you know, those life flashing moments definitely happened that day.
Did it immediately dawn on you as you were hit? And this question probably applies to you as well. Did it immediately dawn on you like, oh, crap? Or was it like, oh, what's going? Oh, now, you know what I'm saying? Was there like that delay or was it an immediate?
No, there was no delay whatsoever. I mean, I was walking into another room when I got hit from behind, and I hear Andrew, you know, screaming 10 feet from me, and I start turning around, and I, you know, whack, whack, whack in the back of the head. And then I fell down too. So I was right next to Andrew, but it was immediately, we've got to get out of here. This is bad, bad, bad. And we're going to die if we don't get out of here. These guys are up to no good.
So they beat you into submission. Essentially.
Absolutely. Pretty much. I couldn't move. I was in and out of consciousness at that point until, you know, I don't remember basically from being there to being into the kitchen, which could have happened 10 minutes, 1 minute. He probably would remember better than me, but it was just, you know, immediately from the second I got hit, you know, I was definitely frightened to death.
And then taken into kitchen. What else were your thoughts? Was it just for your safety? Were you thinking of home? Was it praying? Or, you know, I mean, what's going on in your mind?
So we're on the third floor of this apartment complex, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we knew we had to get out of there. And we're talking, you know, to each other in English. How are we going to get out of here?
Did they speak English?
They did not.
Okay. And so that was lucky. You guys could speak to each other in English, and they wouldn't know what you were saying.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And you know, we're saying maybe we need to jump out the window, but we've got handcuffs on, and I'm thinking, well, even if we are able to jump out the window, we're going to land on our head anyway. So dead is dead. I'd rather get shot than, you know, get really hurt. And so we're having those type of conversations, and we're talking back and forth to each other, and they did not appreciate our conversations that we were having.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came in and they put like duct tape over our eyes and mouth. And that was the end of that conversation.
Yeah.
It didn't dawn on me that the trouble we were in. And then, you know, the first thing I can remember is after I got hit was we were going into the kitchen, and they had like the oven on and the 4 burners of the stove about 6 to 8 inches above the stove. It was just on for some reason. And I'm like, are these guys going to torture us? You know, this is bad, but I think it could get worse, you know, sort of thing. And so, you know, those are the type of thoughts that were running through my mind is, you know, Travis has been here for 11 months. He's kind of a punk. He's probably ticked off a lot of people. Why am I getting beat because of the stuff he's done since I got here?
Was there really that thought?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, there was. It wasn't exactly, you know, Travis is a punk, but I mean, you know, the way they were treating it, it was more than a business transaction to them. It was very passionate. There was a lot of emotion coming from them. I felt like there was a bigger purpose than money at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we thought, you know, we've done something wrong. We've ticked somebody off. Maybe we baptized somebody that we shouldn't have, or whatever. We didn't know. There was very little details coming out of their mouth at that time. But I don't think any of us at that point going into that kitchen thought we had another 10 minutes on this earth.
How do you negotiate your own death? That seems like that would be, like you were saying, you're thinking, oh, I've got handcuffs on. I can jump out the window. That's death. I can stay here and get shot. That's death. Like, I don't know how I would negotiate that in my mind.
Well, basically, I was looking for the quickest way out. You know, if we jump out the window and we just get hurt really bad, well, I mean, that's not good. I'd rather just get shot and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very real thoughts. And it would just, everything happened so fast. I mean, 1 second we're standing there talking to this guy, making sure that he remembered we were coming over.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like 2 seconds later, I've been hitting the back of the head. I've got handcuffs on. I've never had handcuffs before. I've never been jumped before, and I've never had a gun shoved in my face. And so I've got all these new experiences that are taking place, you know, within a matter of seconds of each other. And it was crazy how everything was going so fast, and these guys were just all over the place. And I mean, it's just how you would imagine it in the movies. That's pretty much how it took place. And Garrett did a phenomenal job of taking our verbal description of everything that happened and putting it on film. And that was one of our biggest reservations when Garrett first contacted us, was I didn't think that he could accurately take what we had experienced and all we can do is verbally tell this to him and then to put it on the film. And the first time I saw it, I was amazed at what a great job he did of taking our verbal description of what happened 15 years ago and putting it on the big screen.
So you're in the kitchen, you're there, then what happens?
I mean, when we were, one thing that, you know, that just drove us absolutely nuts to the point where we were ready to either have them shoot us or jump out the window was they put those handcuffs on tighter than, you know, it was unbearable. Our hands obviously were being hit with the bat. Then they put the handcuffs on. So
they're swelling
just,
and you get.
Oh, yeah. It was unbearable to the point where we're just like, if these guys are going to kill us, let's get this over with. I mean, there's no point. But I mean, you know, when you're struggling to try to breathe because they put tape over your mouth and eyes, your hands are hurting. You have those flashback moments in life, and you know, you read the scriptures that, you know, and they say you have a grand recollection or a great recollection of all your guilt, and that's exactly what happens. I mean, you look back and say, you know, boy, that one time when Mom, you know, asked us to take out the trash, we should have took the trash. I mean, you can literally have those things just clearly play through your mind. And, you know, it's just a nutty experience.
Was it a similar recollection of your guilt for you?
Absolutely. Trev? And it was honestly very scary, how clear everything was. I mean, it was, you know, going through the situation, this guy's hitting me with the bat, I'm duct taped up, I'm handcuffed. And here, like, my thoughts are crystal clear. I can see everything happening as clear as day. And, you know, it's the one time in my life that I can really remember that I was having thoughts coming so fast, but everything was so organized, and it was, you know, all the thoughts are coming through crystal clear. And is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? And what are the consequences going to be? And you're having all these rapid bang, 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 bang thoughts, and you're making decisions equally as fast. It was a very, very intense moment.
So then what?
Well, I mean, We sat there, or we laid there basically hogtied for, I would say, what, 5, 10, 15 minutes while they were plotting to do whatever they wanted to do. And then they came in and picked Travis up, put a beanie over his eyes, and, you know, told him, you know, act drunk. They took him out. They were gone for what felt like to me forever, because it was just me in the apartment all by myself laying on the floor with my hands tied to my feet, blindfolded. And then finally somebody came back in, grabbed me, put my shopka or my hat over my head, and then started taking me down to the car. And then, you know, opened up the hatchback, this little hatchback, and they picked me up and threw me in there. Unfortunately, you know, for Travis and, you know, I landed on top of him, they shut the doors and drove off. And, you know, he's got a sob story about how I was choking him or something, but.
And it was tough, you know. They bring Andrew and they put him on top of me. My hands are throbbing, and so I've got my back arched and up in the air to keep all the weight off of my hands, because I mean all the weight was on my hands and it just made it unbearable. And then they come and they drop 175 pounds of dead weight right on top of me, and it, you know, it was something ends up in my esophagus and I can't breathe. And we're driving down the road and I'm like, well, two things are going to happen. I'm going to suffocate, or they're, you know, if I say something, they might get upset and they're going to shoot me again. I'd rather be shot than suffocate. So at that point, I licked the bottom of the tape and just said, I can't breathe. They pull the car over. They rustle us around. I end up in the floorboards of the car, and they jump back in and they take off. And we drove. We didn't drive very far, and we hung a right, and we drove for another 45 minutes outside of town. And as soon as we turned right, I knew exactly where we were. I knew exactly where we were going, and it was not good.
Yeah, we were stationed on the edge of the town in kind of a newer development, and you know, it was the middle of Nowheresville where we were at, basically from the city center. And so
once you take a right,
yeah,
you're done.
Exactly. I mean, there is nothing out there. I mean, it's mostly just, you know, farmland, et cetera. And, yeah, it was a scary time. And we knew every second that went by, it was, our chances were obviously lower and lower. And then we took a road off the main road. We could tell it was off the beaten path because we were bumping around and snow covered. And so we knew finally when we got to our destination that, you know, they've taken us very far away. And, you know, we assumed that they were going to just take us out, shoot us and bury, you know, dig a hole in the snow and throw us in there and get on with whatever they were going to do. Because at this point, they've told us nothing other than shut up.
But that wasn't the plan, though. So what did they do?
So they took us into the second apartment, and they cuff us to the radiator that's in there on the wall. And they tell us, you know, they start asking us a lot of questions. They're getting very frustrated with us because...
What kind of things did they ask you?
Well, they wanted to know where people lived, and they were also looking for phone numbers. And we didn't have either one of those. And, I mean, I don't even remember my address where I live right now. How am I supposed to tell you, you know, where these other people live?
Was people like leaders of the church or like...
Members of the specific ward that we were in and of the city. And I didn't know their phone. A lot of people at that time in Russia didn't even have phones.
Hmm.
So if you had a phone in your apartment or your house, I mean, you were on the upper end. And so they're very frustrated with me. They're talking specifically to me, and I don't know the answers. They're getting very frustrated. And the older guy was there they were both there together, and they came and they snapped a couple of Polaroid pictures, which was extremely scary moment. They walked up to me first, and they put some like a plastic around me, which I had no idea what they're doing. I can't see. And he stands back and he cocks a gun and he pulls the trigger on it, or he dry fires the gun, and they take a Polaroid picture. And it scared me to death, and I went through the ceiling, and they both started laughing, and they cock this gun again, and they dry fire it, and they take another Polaroid, and they go over to Andy, and they do the same thing. Horrible experience. And then the older guy left, and he went and made a ransom note, and it was finally at that moment that we're there with the younger guy Nikolai, and we say, you know, what's going on? What do you guys want? And he says, well, we want $3,000. And immediately, without saying anything to each other, we both started laughing. We're like, $3,000? Let's go back to the apartment. He's got a laptop. We got some souvenirs. We got a little bit of cash. Let's call it a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then he eventually says, you know, I want $300,000. And we didn't have that kind of cash. So we waited.
No, we did not. We did not have that type of cash.
So what you're saying is missionaries don't carry $300,000.
Or $3,000.
Or $3,000.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're pretty resilient. We would have scrounged it up some way. But it was a bad time. Because they were sharing the ransom note with Travis and I, and we can kind of pick out what they were saying, but they kept using this one particular word that we weren't familiar with, but it translates into exterminated. Basically, if you do anything, if you tell anybody, if you try to do something, we're going to exterminate these missionaries, mm-hmm. which is, you know, obviously a word, you know, missionaries in Russia don't use that much, so. Mm-hmm. It was, it was definitely a scary, scary, scary time.
I want to ask this question just because it's curious to me. Did
Absolutely.
You guys continue to call each other elder, or did you were like Andy, Travis?
Oh yeah, no, it was props and Tuttle the whole time.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
okay,
for sure.
Yeah. Cool. I wondered.
Now you know.
Yeah. Now I don't have to wonder anymore. So, how long are you guys held with them?
We're there for a week.
Okay. All the same kind of thing. It was all in this one particular place that they had taken you to.
Yeah.
The right-hand turn, stayed there.
So, yeah, we're in this apartment. We stayed there for the next 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a 10x10 room, and we're handcuffed to each other. We started out handcuffed to the radiator, and then we, you know, got a little bit gutsy, and we asked for some chairs. The chairs were just bar stools, so they were extremely uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And under the tape a little bit, we could see that there was a bed in there. And we asked if we could sit on the bed, and eventually they let us sit on the bed. So now we're handcuffed to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So one hand is handcuffed to the other guy, the other hand is free.
Hmm. Did it seem as though that they were starting to take kind of kind to you, like you guys were, you know, kind to them, obviously?
Yeah,
so they were.
I mean, we were getting on our inner Dale Carnegie and missionary guide tactics. I mean, from the beginning. I mean, obviously.
What is it that stands in the way of you guys allowing us to leave?
Yeah.
We'd like to leave tomorrow at 7, or is Friday at 4 better for
exactly.
you?
Exactly.
Know?
And I think the only thing that was really stopping them was that gun. That gun kept getting in the way of everything. If they mm-hmm. didn't have the gun, it would have made life a lot easier.
Yeah.
Did you have conversations with them about like their life and that kind of stuff? Or
Absolutely.
Was it pretty?
I mean, yeah. I mean, as soon as we could, we started to try to build relationships of trust
mm-hmm.
with Nikolai and
the
as much as we
one.
Could. Yeah. And I remember like the older guy, Piotr Sergei, whatever you want to call him, he would come in. And every time, you know, I treated them like I was visually impaired, because I was, you know. I have a niece and a nephew that are visually impaired, and when I'm always around them, they always want to, you know, have a hand on me, hold my hand, so that they feel like they can communicate better. And so I would always do that. I would always reach my hand out and say Piotr or Nikolai, and I would grab their hands and I'd immediately take their hand and put it on my heart. Mm-hmm. They could feel my heartbeat, and then I would have like these very emotional, you know, conversations with them, like, you know, you're not going to kill us, right? I mean, my mom, you know. You've got a mom, I've got a mom. And, you know, Travis and I would kind of tear up and kind of cry together as we were talking to them.
But sincerely, right? This wasn't
absolutely.
This was not faking. This was giving them specific examples why they don't want to kill us. And our whole attitude on it was, it's harder to kill your friends than your enemies. So if we're jerks to these guys and we make it, you know, even more difficult than it already is, because they're stressed out too.
Sure.
And if we make it harder than it really is, we're just giving them more reasons to kill us.
Yeah, the best thing we could have done was just love them. And that's exactly what we did.
So was that a conscious choice? You're like, let's love them.
Absolutely.
Who was it, one or both?
I think it was both of us. It just went without being said. Okay. You know, being difficult, putting up a fight, not doing what they tell you to do, that's not gonna get us anywhere.
So then what?
Well,
we know that you live. Unfortunately, it's a little bit of a spoiler alert as far as the movie goes, you guys are here talking
away,
with me.
Yes, absolutely. So we're sitting in this room and we're here for, you know, the next couple of days. And at one point, we actually did come up with the idea of escaping. Give all the credit to Andy. He kind of pulled a little Houdini trick and undid the handcuffs. And so we start plotting of how we're going to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with a lot of different ideas of what we're going to do. Some of them were better than the others.
Now you dance like a clown.
Yeah.
No, that won't work.
Yeah. But we're, you know, and it's a very, very hyped up situation. I mean, just imagine the most, you know, pumped up you've ever been for a sporting event or, you know, whatever gets you up and excited, times 10, times 50, times 100. That's where we were. And that's the excitement level that we had come to. And we're coming with all these different ideas. We're praying about these ideas. Is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? And so finally we came up with the idea that one of us was going to go in the bathroom, and there underneath the bat in the bathroom there was a glass jar. And we were gonna one guy was going to go get it. When he came out of the bathroom, he was going to hit Nikolai in the head with it. That was supposed to knock him out. We're going to jump up, we're going to get the key, handcuff him to the radiator, and you know, we had every intention of shooting him if we needed to. And we were fully prepared to shoot Sergei when he came back.
So let's save the rest of it, because we know that there is the movie. The movie's called The Saratov Approach, that people can check out. I want to ask a couple questions before I let you guys go, though. Was there ever a point for you, Andrew, where it's like, I told you we shouldn't have gone in? Was that ever a thing where you're like, listen, I told you so. I felt this. You know, was there ever any of that kind of emotion?
I don't remember any of that, anything like that. I mean, it was, you know, we're obviously in it together. He was the senior companion, and, you know, ultimately, you know, hindsight being 20/20, looking back, I'm glad we ignored the signs basically at that time. The important part was we didn't ignore the signs after the fact. I mean, we were living there in the moment, listening very, very closely to the spirit. We weren't trying to rush through life. And we made very good decisions based on, you know, our communication with our Heavenly Father from that point.
As I've read in stories, you guys didn't talk to each other then for a long time.
Yeah, we did. We kind of fell out of touch, and it was just, you know, life.
How does that happen? If I was kidnapped with someone and held at gunpoint for a week, like, I get it with the guy that I didn't like that I served my mission with, sure, I don't ever want to see that guy again.
It sounds
again,
like you
really
had a lot of those guys, yes, with all 19, yes, of your companions.
But the ones that I liked, even just liked, I've kept in touch with.
We just kind of went in different directions. I mean, we were living in different states. We didn't have the social media that we have today, and he got married, you know, not too long after being
good
home.
Work there, it is, got that done.
And I wasn't married. I was still living the rebel razzler life, and so we just kind of went in different directions. There wasn't a specific reason. I hate you, you're, you know, ticked me off. Went in different directions.
And what are you guys up to now then?
As far,
I mean,
as life goes,
you're doing this stuff with the movie, but where is life brought you now?
So I'm still living in Arizona. Married, four kids now.
Jeez.
So I got married after Andy, but boy, did I kick it in gear after that.
Yeah, right. You got to catch up.
That's right. And so we got the four kids. I'm working in sales now, computer, hardware, software, services. And yeah.
Do you tell your kids about the experience?
Very watered down version.
Okay.
So they're the oldest one's only 9.
Okay.
And we don't want to scare them and put any traumatic experiences.
We actually would like them to go on missions.
Yes, we.
So
that is definitely a goal. So we don't want to scare them too much.
Nice. What about you?
Married almost 15 years now. My wife and I adopted two children.
Oh, cool.
I own a real estate management company. We have about 50 employees in Boise, manage Jeez. About 2,200 homes or apartments. And I also do, commercial real estate too. So staying pretty busy.
Cool.
Very busy.
The name of the film again is The Saratov Approach. Is it Saratov Approach or The Saratov Approach? Help me out here.
The Saratov Approach.
Okay. I wanted to make sure I got it right. And if you live somewhere else in outside of the Intermountain West, you can go to their Facebook page. You can find a link at theculturalhall.com and say, hey, we want this film in our city. Come have this film in our city. And you guys can...
And you screened the film, is that correct?
Yeah, I loved it.
What was your favorite part?
I think that maybe my favorite part was the whole leading up, the conversation that the two elders have about the Book of Mormon and not having one. I thought that was pretty funny. But there are a few touching moments towards the end. And I won't share those, sure. the specifics of those, but touching moments at the end where I was like, that's really awesome, both in the relationship that is portrayed between the two of you in the movie and then also between the two of you and the captors. And so I thought that was... It was pretty great. I think that Garrett did a great job.
Absolutely.
The director of it, of course, putting that together. Well, we hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.